Welcome to the ITSB Magazine Podcast Network. You're listening to a new episode of the Founder Pack Podcast, where your host, Brendan Rod, brings startup stories from experienced founders and other functional experts to help current and future founders get inspired and grow their knowledge with quick, tactical insights. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hey Yuval, welcome to the show.
Yo Brendan, what's up?
Hey, good. Baruch haba.
Thank you, toda man.
Had to get a little Hebrew in there.
How is Sion doing?
He's good, allergy free.
Oh, the poor thing.
I'm taking advantage of the seasons. The gods doing me a favor.
Hoping better soon.
How is your week going so far?
Busy. You know, we had an event this week. We don't go a lot to events, so it was quite good. And a lot of work, growing, hiring, lots of clients coming. So busy, really busy.
What are some things keeping you up at night of late?
Except for the kids. Now my kids are okay. I'm firstly a father of two. I have two kids, a boy and a girl, 8 and 6. But they sleep quite tight, so it's mostly work. I'm trying to, you know, in recent years, I'm trying to sleep more and trying to keep a balance, work-life balance. But when I'm working late, it's because sometimes it's like product taking, talking to employees, to our guys about product, and just trying to find ways to grow and new hacks, new tricks, learning stuff. You need to learn, always learn. It can be from DevOps to marketing to new channels. So it's an everyday work. But I am trying to not keep up too late. I'm almost 40. I think it's time to make some balance work-life.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. We were just talking off camera that I might be going through a midlife crisis, hence the beard. and trying to work smarter,
next
not
time
harder.
It's the Ferrari. They say it's a Ferrari for the midlife.
We'll see. It will be a nice.
Yeah, I think I have some of this going on. My wife says that I have this going on. I'm not sure if she's right, but I'm going 3 times to the gym, for example, in a week, and I'm walking the dog every day, like 1 hour in the evening. And I'm much stronger than I was like 20 years ago. And my wife says, "In your midlife crisis," but maybe she's right. I don't know.
Yeah, I like to take the approach now of working smarter, not harder, and preserving our energy and using our wise wisdom and age as an advantage, a competitive advantage.
Be more efficient. Use our time more efficiently. And you don't need to work until 2 a.m. to do work that you can do in less time and with more thinking and more efficiency that you can do in less time. You come to realize this when you grow. And I think it's about the time.
And it's interesting that you, and a coincidence, or maybe it's a trending theme that's going around lately, is trying to fit your work into your life versus trying to fit your life around your work. I've spoken to a couple founders in the last few months who realized this either early on or too late, and they were regret that they didn't have this understanding earlier on. And I'm sure many people, including myself, not that I'm a founder, but like we...
Yeah, it's not unique for founders. Yeah.
Yeah.
But mostly when you're a founder, even if you're just a business owner, it doesn't matter if it's SaaS or technology at all. You can be just the owner of a falafel or a burrito stand. But when you manage your own business or you have stakes, then it's really easy, quote unquote, to dive in and just get too deep and work too late and work your ass off. So this is when you really need the work-life balance. And sometimes when you have a boss, if he's a good one, he will tell you, don't work too late, you're just working yourself out. But if you're a founder, especially if you're a solopreneur, which I'm not, then you have only yourself or your co-founder, and your co-founder has you, and you need to balance yourself. You know, you have your family, of course, you have your family. But you're more responsible to yourself when you're a founder to keep the work-life balance.
Yeah, and I am really excited and curious to learn from you today about being a bootstrapped founder and having all these discussions around efficiency, work-life balance, and working smarter, not harder. I think it's all these themes tie nicely into the episode.
Indeed.
So I don't know, maybe we can open up the episode with what are some misconceptions about being a bootstrapped company?
Firstly, there is a misconception about bootstrappers that they always leave on the edge and they're always scrapping for budget. It doesn't have to be like that. We have these days, but if you are efficient with spending, we grew from 2 to 40 people. It took us time, but most of this growth was not, we are quite veterans. Our business was established and founded in 2007. But most of the growth happened in the last 2 years since COVID, more or less. You don't need to scrap in order to grow if you do it very efficiently. If you go to the right channels, if you consult your peers, if you go to the right communities. For me, it was listening to a lot of podcasts, like yours, for example, which is very good, I have to say. I'm listening to all of these podcasts, and it can be technology, it can be about business and SaaS. And don't be ashamed, like, to learn and to say to yourself, I'm not perfect and I have a lot to learn. And you learn daily. And if you're open and you learn daily, you learn these hacks and tricks. You don't need to listen to every advice that you hear from any peer or any podcast, but you can have your takeaways and take the ones that are relevant for you. Each business is unique, is has its own signature. It's like DNA, living creature, every business, in SaaS or in other business. And you need to take takeaways that are relevant for your business, for your DNA. And if you take the right takeaways, and you learn and you're not reluctant to learn new stuff and say, you're not arrogant and you say, I know everything, because we were there. But when you open your head to it and you're listening, then you really start to grow better and you can be more efficient. Don't trying to invent the wheel. It's not like it doesn't work, I think, just to try to scrap every day. So it starts by learning, you know, trial and error is always good. For a bootstrapper and in business in general. But if you listen to good advice, you can save a lot of time. So this is one advice I can give is like to learn, if possible, daily, to learn daily new stuff and evolve. It's like a snow, like hard snow that you have, like a typhoon, a blizzard, and you can't stay foot. You freeze. You always need to be in the move and learn. Same for business, same for SaaS. Same for bootstraps, especially probably.
And in terms of misconceptions, are there other things that are like super challenging as a bootstrapped company other than the lack of funding or less access to resources? What are some of the other challenges or misconceptions?
One challenge, I'm not sure if it's a misconception, but maybe it is. When you have like venture-backed competitors, for example, It's not that you need to give up. Sometimes people think that if you're a bootstrapper, you need to go just for some niche and segment your business. Maybe it's a good hack, and we did it, by the way. But sometimes on the same playground with venture-backed, we win also. So this is another misconception, I think, just to give up and not starting the fight. But you can, as a bootstrapper, I'm talking like there are other bootstrappers listening. Of future bootstrappers, you can be on the same thoughts, you can be in the same arena with a venture-backed competitor, company, SaaS, whatever. And as a bootstrap, you can give a fight, you can? Sometimes it's a low punch. I'm always telling people that we give a low punch because we can do stuff that the venture-backed companies, sometimes they can't do it because we're like a small, fast boat and they're like a Titanic sometimes. Not always, but in general, maybe as an 80-20 rule, they are, and you can be faster and you can give the low punch. And sometimes the low punch works. And we did it. Sometimes we take like clients, for example, from our competitors, and some of them are much bigger than us. Sometimes like they have a quarter of $1 billion funding. And we are as a small seven-figure company. Sometimes we take clients from these huge ones and you can do it.
So, can you, without necessarily going into like specifics of your industry, like what are some of the go-to-market plays or strategies that allows you to win against much bigger competitors? Is it product market fit? Is it customer service, your sales process, pricing, messaging? What is the advantage?
A lot of stuff. Yeah. I mean, a lot of stuff in life, like a lot of answers to a lot of questions, it's not always like one thing, of course. It's always a combination of stuff. A few of the things you said quite spot on. If you have a really good product market fit, for example, you take a few countries, for example, just an example. We are a SaaS for hospitality businesses. So we take, for example, e-invoicing, right? Just an example. E-invoicing, and we just work our ass on this stuff. And this is something that sometimes it's a pain point, even for the big ones. So the big dogs, sometimes they have difficulty with this. We just made a lot of interviews with clients and we discovered that this is a pain point even for the biggest companies. You know, even Oracle. Okay, let's say I did, you know, I mentioned one name, which they have an hospitality product. So sometimes they have pains also in stuff that you cannot imagine. And if you attack these specifics, that means a lot of client interviews and learning and knowing your industry in order to discover these hacks and to focus there. But sometimes, for example, some of our competitors, even the rich ones, they don't have success support by phone, for example. For us, it's the basics. It's not just, we have chat, we have WhatsApp, we have a lot of channels, but we still have this old school phone support that people like to call there. So yeah, we help any client like he wants. It can be any channel. And some of them, they like the phone and they tell us, you have a good product. The other competitor has a good product. You have some stuff they don't have. They have some stuff you don't have. I just like to pick up the phone and just call and talk to someone, to a human. So it sounds old school. Some clients, they just move. They just go and they move a product and they start working with us because they heard we have a very superb customer success and also by phone. So, you know, this kind of stuff.
And that's awesome because it doesn't, not like rocket science to give good support. Right. It's just the basic.
Right.
Yeah, it requires to invest a bit more in
human. Yeah, my other example of the e-invoicing, for example, there was very good engineering involved. Yeah. So it can be both. It can be the old school. In two examples, right, that I gave you here. One is old school, with support with phone. And one is very good engineering. Just we don't have 200 engineers like some of our competitors have, but our six guys just think tremendous work. And we did something which is very technological needed and the market needs it. And it's a pain point. Yeah. So sometimes it's very good engineering and sometimes it's just plain old logics.
No, it's great. Yeah. And having an acute attention to your customer and listening to them, doing customer research, it goes to show that doing the basics can give you a competitive advantage over the bigger guys that maybe take things for granted or just overlook the small details.
Yeah, the word that you said is the basics, because we have competitors that are trying a lot of verticals, for example. We have a few verticals. And we have a good, quite big marketplace with a lot of extras. So clients can just take another product and use. We have APIs and it's connected. So they have a way to complete some gaps using a marketplace. And some of our competitors, they have a lot of verticals in the product, which is, in one hand, it's good. But in another hand, it's a lot of work to maintain all of the verticals. And you need a lot of engineers in different types of engineers. And it's a lot of spending, first of all. And secondly, they are not focused sometimes on one vertical, which is very good. They have a lot of verticals, which they are mediocre in a lot of. So sometimes when you're bigger, you're not necessarily focused and you're not necessarily very great in one vertical. And you can be just mediocre in a lot of verticals. So this is another mistake that I see venture-backed companies do. You know, we are very good in our three verticals and we have a very good marketplace to complete the rest of the stuff. And some of our competitors, they're just mediocre in a lot of verticals. Have your pick. So we have good competitors and there are some good companies out there, but a lot of them fall there. They have trouble there.
And I apologize. We should have given you a few minutes to introduce yourself to the audience and just share your background and how you got into being a founder and how you got into the business that you're in right now. Maybe just give us like a 60 seconds, 2 minutes.
Elevator. Intro.
Yeah, yeah.
Real estate for hospitality, mostly hotels and guest houses, vacation rentals. They run their business with our SaaS, A to Z, really all in one suite. Reception and invoicing and connection to travel agents like booking, Airbnb, etc. This is it in a nutshell. And me, myself, I'm almost 40 years old. And in 2007, me and my dad, both of us founded the business. My dad is a veteran engineer. He was a CTO in companies. And in 2006, while working in another a company, he was just playing around building this product. He thought it would be just for B&Bs, like a SaaS for B&Bs. There was no word as SaaS back then. he thought it would be a program, a software for B&Bs, but we ended up joining him in 2007 when he had the MVP ready. And it turned out that this product is very good for small hotels as well and vacation rentals. And we grew from there. We were just two, you know, and we took the Israeli market first, mostly the small to medium hotels and guest houses and vacation rentals. And we grew step by step until what we are today. We work in 60 plus countries. We have 1,200 clients working. And we have almost 40 employees right now. And we had a big change during COVID, actually. Our clients are the hotels, right? It's B2B. It's not the consumers. It's not the guests.
Gotcha.
It's the, for example, the receptionists. They use it to make check-ins, check-outs, the invoices. We connect the hotel to its own website, for example. We connect the hotel to booking.com, to Airbnb, to Hostelworld, Expedia, like hundreds of sites. And then what they have is like a single point, all in one suite. They work in one place. They don't need to go to booking.com, for example, to update their availability or pricing. They don't need to go to Airbnb and do the same. And then to Hostelworld and do the same, et cetera, Airbnb. And to their own calendar to make the, when they make a reservation, it's automatically closes the availability in all of this cycle, all of these sites all together. And they make the invoice for the guest and they make a soft check-in. So it's a all-in-one suite to run the hotel, essentially.
Awesome.
It's a B2B. It's a classic SaaS B2B, what we have.
How did you get your first 10 customers?
The first client, I was a student back then. The first client before I joined my dad just gave it free to one B&B, bed and breakfast, and just say, try it. And then the other one just heard about it somehow and he got in, paid us. And then I joined my dad to help out with customer success back then. Later on with IT because did a Microsoft course. So IT and cloud and that kind of stuff. And we had a seller, which was a contracted seller. He wasn't an employee, but he was very good. And I did myself some sales. Even my dad made a few sales, but essentially it was the seller and me making most of the sales. And we grew to be like, number one in Israel, I think, maybe in the segment, like not for the 5 stars or the 4 stars, but for the up to 60 unit, up to 60 rooms hotels. I think in 2 or 3 years, we became market leaders for this specific segment in Israel. It was quote unquote easy because there was substantial and superb blue ocean. It was a blue ocean in this segment. It was amazing. The standard, he called it like a field of gold, and you just need to go and grab the gold because it was funny how easy it was. And we had a good product because my father is a genius engineer. He's a tremendous backend engineer, architect of software, and he's very tremendous in his work, and he's known also here. In the business. In the front end, we lacked a little bit, but we compensated later about the front end. But we had the killer product and the good seller and the good customer success and good IT. So we have 2 or 3 people. Later, we switched the seller. But just me and my dad, I was quite good in sales also in marketing. I'm a generalist myself. So between him and me, we were like an ecosystem. Me and my dad are like an ecosystem. You know, I'm also telling him a joke that if we had a financial issue and our competitor, this these big dogs, they have an issue. We just can sit with that underwear and just both of us and fire everybody, and we're still going on. Because he's an engineer, I'm making the customer success, I'm making the cloud and some DevOps, and we are just, we're just creating it somehow. And we're an ecosystem of two people. So we are, it's funny. But yeah, of course, now it's harder because we have an engineer which is very good in front end. And we have a lot of functions and marketing, of course. But if you take a few years ago, this joke was not quite realistic if you take a few years back. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's very nice.
And then like...
We are hands-on. We are hands-on since day one.
So it's interesting that you said that you lacked in front end.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
I don't know what's the word.
Design, mostly design. And
UX. Pizzazz, as they call it here.
But they say, there's the saying that you must be ashamed of your first MVP, etc. So it's all, those cliches are mostly real.
Would you say it still is like that today? Do people not buy with their eyes more today than maybe they did when you first started more than a decade ago?
It's a very good question, Brandon. I think that because I'm in the business so much long, I can tell you you're right. People buy with their eyes more than they used to. They are more picky. There are more competitors. There's Capterra and G2, and you can see all the alternatives. And you like the dating world. I'm old school in both turfs, in both things. I'm old school. There are a lot of options. And design is important. And this is why, after working with, let's say, a legacy tech stack, during COVID, we had a lot of time. This can be another conversation if you like, but during COVID, we had a lot of time, and we evolved, and we had more engineers, so we could make like changing the stack and moving to the cloud and migrating. And we did it very smart. Like we kept the same database, and our clients that are using the older product, they can still work in parallel, they can work in both products. This is very rare in the business, in any SaaS business, going from legacy to cloud and to browser. We're working with browser right now. We don't sell, for a few years now, we don't sell any legacy product, any of the older design, only browser. And we have an app, Play Store, App Store. And we very much care for the design. Yeah, like any SaaS, we always aspire for more, but it looks very good right now, I think. And it's very important for the clients to see browser today. You can go with something that is not on browser today. And yeah, you need good design, because people sometimes, the first impression is very important, and we must be aware of this. We can't neglect this thing.
And you spoke of COVID. So how did the companies survive COVID? And are there any lessons learned from COVID that you're applying now in this current recession?
COVID for any travel business and any travel tech business was horrific, because travel was one of the things that were hit the most and hit first. And any closure, it's the first hit. And we dropped, like a lot of travel tech businesses and travel businesses in general, we dropped like 50% in revenue during that time. And all in all, in average, 40 to 50% less in revenue. But we had the luck, because we were working in Israel for a few years, and then in Latam, like in Argentina, for example, a lot. But during the time, we accumulated some other regions and clients from other regions. So if there was a closure in Israel, and there was not in Argentina, and then it was the other way around. So we had some revenue going on. Iceland was open. So we were lucky to diverse in the regions. So this was a good thing. And secondly, and this is like cycling back to the other topic we talked, because we're a bootstrap, because we're a family, because we are an ecosystem, 2+ people in the core, then the abilities and capabilities, then we could like, and we have employees that are with us for 10 years. So we could be like a team of ninjas. And so we could scrap it and put our heads down. But then there was the boredom, no travel, and you're at home. And what should we do? Just don't have anything to do. So this was like, I'm not sure if it was a savior for the company, but maybe it was, because I'm not sure if we would plateau if we wouldn't have, if it wouldn't before the COVID, I don't know. But we used the COVID very smartly. And we used it for building. I do a lot of product managing work. And me and the team and my dad and everyone, all the engineers, we sat down. And all the product managers, we sat down. And everybody else they wanted, we sat down everybody and just talked about product. Took the clients. We have the Asana with all those tickets and all those requests from the clients from a few dozens of countries. And we just sat down and filtered and just worked on the work and build and engineered and build workflows and engineered some more and migrated to cloud some stuff that we were waiting to be migrated. And the product was very much improved during that time in a way that I'm not sure the everyday life in every business and especially in a bootstrap SaaS is very, very tense. This was a very good time to just stop and build. And I think the COVID just made us better. And we also came up with a new strategy in business. So it was a tech and business. It's not a pivot, I would say, but it's a mini pivot for us. And we came stronger and better from the COVID. And looking back, maybe the business would have looked different if it weren't for the COVID. So yeah, maybe it saved the business. I don't know. I didn't feel that we are in trouble or something. I just feel that looking back, probably we would plateau if we didn't have this time just to build because we were so busy and hectic daily work.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me how just getting out of the operational grind and taking time out to think and digest and work on the business versus in the business can change the trajectory of the business for the better. You need time to be creative. You need a bit of like quiet and internal analysis. And that doesn't happen when you're in the daily grind. And I don't think it's specific to like businesses. It can happen to individuals too, creatives, whatever line of work you're in. If you're a creator, I think the best thing you can do for inspiration, you need some time to think. Take time out of your day or your month or your quarter to do some deep thinking.
You're right. And some of the biggest ideas that I had, I still have, are during gym, for example, during training and walking with my dog. And when it was COVID, I had a lot of runs and I had a lot of walking with the dog and a lot of time out in the nature. I have the luck to live in the countryside in Israel. Was one of the best moves, one of the best decisions of my life 10 years ago exactly, when me and my wife moved to the Galilee in Israel, in north of Israel. It's just 2 hours drive from Tel Aviv, but it's another world out here. It's nature. I was walking with my dog and just running for a few kilometers every day. And best ideas are when you're just, like you say, digesting and thinking. And for me, it was like hearing podcasts and hearing a lot of new hacks, tricks, and how to grow the business and new marketing ideas. And sometimes in the same day or the day after, I would call my VP of marketing, for example, and let's try this one. Let's try A-B testing. Let's try. I heard about it. Let's try A-B testing. Just for an example, you grow when you just take some time out, as you say. And still, even if there is no COVID, still a lot of the best ideas you can get when you're just winding it down and going to the gym and going for a walk. But in during COVID, I learned about it. I learned to listen more and just to digest more, like you say. So COVID was life changer, I think, for a lot of tech companies and for me too. And it's not a cliche. It taught me how to think more and to listen more. I think COVID helped me also individually, to me personally. Also to the company. So maybe it's a life changer, the COVID, for some people.
And how is the recession compared to COVID? How has it affected your business? And have you applied similar learnings from COVID to this recession, if you are being affected by the recession?
Not so much. In the personal level, a lot of people, you're into the savings or stocks or whatever. But if I'm just looking at the business, actually, the travel business and specifically the travel tech business also, you can see in LinkedIn, if you see like rounds, in funding rounds, you can still see travel tech businesses in funding rounds and taking new rounds. And you can see travel in general is booming. And I think it will not, it's not affected right now like the other businesses. And there is one very simple reason for it. I will tell you a secret, Brenton. You want to hear a secret?
I love surprises and secrets.
People love to travel. They love to go to hotels. They love to go to vacation rentals and to guest houses. It's not like maybe 100 years ago.
Even if they can't afford it, is what you're saying. They will go.
Yeah, people are taking, I hear about it, people are taking loans and going to vacations. And people, not only because of the revenge travel, if you heard about that term, but also afterwards, and you can see it, you can see it in the funding rounds of the travel tech companies, just one symptom, just one result of it. But you can see that people like to travel and it's part of life. It's not something, it's not an extra to life. I heard a lot about it recently, also in podcasts. It's not like an extra to life. It's something that is embedded in life. It's basic. It's a basic needs. People talk about travel as a basic need. Like every person, which even if it's, if he's not a rich guy, if they're not rich, any family, they want to wind down and take like at least one vacation per year. Sometimes people take 10 vacations, you know, but people love to travel and take vacations and rest. And this will not change because it's in human nature. People love it. And because it's so basic today, then everything evolving travel, which is also travel tech, is always there and it will be there. Even if all humanity will be robots and ChatGPTs, like in sci-fi movies, still people would want to go to vacations. You agree with me, Jay? You agree with me, Brandon? Or, I mean, about that point, or maybe you disagree, I don't know.
You're talking to a guy who lived in four different countries, so you don't need to, you're preaching to the choir, as they say. Yeah,
basically,
I definitely love traveling. I've done, I don't know, maybe 30 countries. I would love to do every single country in my lifetime. I've slowed down a little bit since COVID and like other family responsibilities, but I hope to get back on the travel horse soon.
So you dig me, right? You dig passion, the passion for travel. People love it. And because they love it, then everything evolving like hospitality and travel will always be there. Because the humanity grows, then the travel also grows. There is no way to stop travel, even if there is the recession. People just wanna go to vacations and travel,
and
nothing will stop it. Nothing will.
Are you planning to have your software deployed in Mars with the Starship?
First, we have good business here on Earth, but
part of the roadmap.
It's a good idea. It's a good idea, Brandon.
You can add it to the next 10-year
roadmap. We'll think tank. Yeah.
As we kind of wrap up here today, I thought maybe we could close out with hiring. As a bootstrap company, what have been some of the learnings, patterns, tricks, techniques, I don't know, gut feelings that you've developed over time in making great hires? Because you mentioned you have some employees that have been with you for 10 years. So you must be really picking your employees really well, or what's the secret?
Yeah, firstly, because you're a bootstrap, you can't go and use the same Torah, the same rules that the big dogs use and the big corporates use. And you need to adapt. Firstly, it's hearing a lot of other peers and hearing and reading a lot about it. If you just improvise, I think as a bootstrapper, you will hit the wall. You can compete with the big dogs there. So what you can do when you hire? Firstly, you really need to do a good pick. You need to do a picks when you hire, and more junior hiring, of course. And when you make a junior hiring, you need to have the right script and you need to have the right test. And you need to, because of the budget is crappy, you need to have a certain pilot that is really segmented and when it starts, when it ends. And sometimes a good advice, it worked. I don't know. I think everybody can make it a takeaway or not. But for me, a good hack is hiring clients, for example. For me, it was a good trick and it worked because clients, especially smart ones that are good and they love your software, and they know it very good, it saves, firstly, it's good because they love it and they know it already. So it saves you some time to filter the people if they're going to be good at it or not. They're already good at it. The person, if he's like your client for some time, so it's another filter for the interview, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, for me, it worked to take clients that want to change in life and they want to maybe do customer support, or they want to be in marketing, or it can be anything, just to offer them, maybe you can come work with us for us. And sometimes they love it and it's a good fit. And when it works great for us, it worked great during the years. And when you hire engineers and in more high paid roles, then for us as Bootstrap, it was mostly taking juniors and having a very good test to really filter the very good ones and keeping them. And we have some engineers that became seniors while working with us. And we are very lucky also. So you need some luck because we have a few like very genius engineers in our team. And I think in hiring, we are quite good in hiring. If you like to hear some hiring stories, I can also share a few because it's a thing for us. We are quite good with hiring. And you need to be good. You need to be, as a bootstrapper, you don't have another choice. You don't have a choice. You must be good in hiring. Other way, just waste time and you're spending.
So maybe give us one more trick that other than the hiring your clients. That's a great one. I think I haven't heard it too much, but I've heard it here and there, and it makes total sense. If it works, it sounds like an awesome way to hire. What other insights?
A good insight for bootstraps specifically, in my opinion, is, and it's related to the other key thing that I told you before, hiring in USA, for example, for us, it's strictly very difficult to impossible, especially engineer roles. And I think for a lot of bootstrappers, like if they want a bigger team, I'm not saying it's just the rule and US engineers and Israeli engineers are great, but I'm just being realistic. If you're a bootstrap and you can hire a few engineers versus one engineer in USA, for example, and you can have a few in another location in the world, then it's a win-win. It's a win for these guys. They get a good job, they get a good pay, and it's good for the company, and it's good for the clients, and you can afford it. And then you have a good team. If you're hiring good, and for us, we have 3 offices in the world. We have Israel, and we have Argentina, and we have Serbia. So most of our employees, we have only 6 employees in Israel, and the rest are in Argentina and in Serbia. We are almost 40 people. Today we have a local entity in every country. But even if you don't have, and you just start with Upwork or Fiverr or whatever, and later on you can ramp up, it's still a good way to do it. Hiring abroad and in countries where you can afford it. And I think just trying to compete with venture-backed companies on hiring, it's not realistic when you're a bootstrap. I'm not talking about MailChimp, which is a $12 billion exit bootstrap. There are those bootstrap. But mostly, if you take the 80-20 rule, I think most of the bootstraps would love to hire more in another country, in another location. And I think it's a good rule, and it always worked for us. And it's a win-win.
And I think they're excellent engineers, to my knowledge, from both experience and also just from speaking with other founders in South America, in Serbia, Romania, Ukraine.
Right. Ukraine are great.
They're great developers around the world. You just need to expose yourself. I think there's just a stigma that only the best years come from Israel, but and sometimes Eastern European countries get bucketed into that as well. But the other countries like Mexico and Argentina
everywhere.
And Brazil, they get left out of the picture.
Yeah, and you talked about misconceptions when we started the interview. So one misconception is this. And we have in Argentina, for example, genius engineers. And another misconception is that people think, okay, you're a bootstrap, you have these in Argentina or in Serbia. It's probably outsourcing. No, it's not outsourcing. For us, for example, we open entities, we open companies in these countries. We have an accountant, we have a bank account, we have local people, and it makes it really easier to hire locally. And of course, we insist that they know very good English so we can interact But there are smart people, not just engineers. There are smart people everywhere in the world. This is a misconception again. There are smart people everywhere. And you just need to look. You just need to be open-minded. And if you're open-minded and given you give a chance, then you can discover very smart people, not only in engineering, in all teams, all across the board. You can find really smart people everywhere.
We forgot to mention India, like how big a player is India, like in the bootstrapped environments.
Yeah, of course. We don't have experience specifically with India, but I hear a lot of stories and I have a lot of peers. And in India, there are a lot of places in the world and I don't rule out any. Just be open-minded to hear and interview people. And sometimes when people bug you on LinkedIn, sometimes it's spam. And sometimes good people that are just waiting for their chance. So be open-minded.
Awesome, Yuval. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Fascinating topic. And I'm glad I had the privilege to speak with you. Before we wrap up here, is there anything you would like to add that we may have not covered up until now?
No, just that if some other bootstrappers or future bootstrappers hear us, I think it's a good learning. What we talked about is your good learnings, and try to be open-minded to hiring in the world and not just in your in US, for example. And just know that you can do it. You can do it, and you can compete even in the arena with the big dogs. Just a bit of confidence and just to think out of the box.
Just think David and Goliath whenever you have doubt.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Thank you again so much for your time. If anyone would like to connect with you, pick your brain a bit more on this topic, or just simply curious about being a customer, where's the best place for people to connect with you?
Mostly, you can find me on LinkedIn.
Awesome. We'll add that in the show notes. So thanks, Yuval. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Brandon. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Founder Pack Podcast with Brendan Rod, part of the ITSB Magazine Podcast Network. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share the channel and ITSBmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey.